Hello and welcome to Hustle, a new podcast providing industry advice for women in music. Are you passionate about music and want to stop the hustle and make your dreams a reality? Then this is the podcast for you. Not only do I interview other female artists, but labels, promoters, collectives, and everything in between. I also dive into the nitty-gritty business and marketing side. You can expect positive energy, motivation, a lot of laughs, and of course, inspiring guests. Hosted by myself, Eliza, the founder of Good Vibes Only Music, I'm a full-time DJ and entrepreneur. Thank you for listening. Please follow and subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Peace, love, and good vibes always. Today on Hustle, we're going to be speaking to Sam Warren. She's a professor of organization studies at the University of Portsmouth in the UK. She has a researching career, experiences of female electronic music producers to investigate how to bring about better gender balance in the industry. She is a co-chair of the AFEM's Diversity and Inclusion Group, has written for Mixmag, The Independent, Dance Cult, and Beat Portal, which is forthcoming. And Sam also DJs and produces music under the name Dovetail. So Sam, thank you so, so much for coming on the podcast.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, it's nice to actually put a face to a name as well, because we've been chatting for quite some time, haven't we?
It's got to be well over a year. Yeah, maybe two.
Must be two. It must be over two now, I think.
I met you through Saya. Saya Mars.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love her. I love her.
Yes.
She's my little ninja partner. Just the energy that comes off that girl is unreal, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And she was one of my earliest guests on In the Key of She, which is the name of the research project that you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. And I think she was the third person that was part of that, because I put the interviews out as a radio show.
Yeah,
with radio in collaboration with Sisu. I came away from that interview just buzzing, just feeling like I could achieve absolutely anything.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been very lucky to work. I mean, I actually met her because I booked her to play on a festival stage. So we're diving into her at the moment. We will come back to you. To book at a festival stage. And I just connected with her. And then she helped me with Good Vibes Only. We did a couple of events together. Then she set up I Am The Music with her partner, Adam. And we've just been friends. She's been out here a couple of times. We've done like all female tours. And it's just vibes. And she's amazing. But anyway, enough about her. She'll be blushing if she hears this. please tell me how you got into music. What's your story?
Gosh, well, it's quite, yeah, it depends how far back you want to go, really. Music has always been a massive part of my life. And it's only as I've got older that I've realised that electronic music has also always been a massive part of my life, because I actually didn't get into raving until I was 30. My ex-husband, he wasn't ex-husband at the time, he was my husband, but he got me into raving, and I went to my first rave on South Parade Pier in Southsea in 2000. It was called The Fish Tank, and it was amazing. It's hard house, hard dance, hard trance.
Oh, I remember the hard house day. Yeah, I remember them.
I'm going to play a hard house set in a couple of weeks' time, actually.
Oh, yeah. Oh my god, banging. What was that tune? I'm the D-E-V-L, the devil.
Yes, I can't remember who it's by, but I might even put that one in my bag. Anyway, so I used to feel like, that was 2000. I used to think, I was never in the scene from the start. I didn't do the M25 raves, and I didn't do all of that acid house days. And somehow that made me feel like I was less of an electronic music fan or something. And then it was only when I was thinking about the music I loved as a kid in my teenage years, and it was all synth pop, you know, it was all Depeche Mode, Japan, David Sylvian, or he was Japan, wasn't he? But yeah, all that kind of synth pop stuff, I always loved it. It was always just so cool. I mean, even bands like Howard Jones were a bit naff, but he played a synthesizer, and that's kind of all I ever wanted was a synthesizer. Never occurred to me that's something that I could do. And I mean, we were very poor when I was a kid. My mum, there's no way mum and dad could have afforded a synthesizer for me.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there was a gender dimension to that as well, because these were all boys. It just was so far off my radar that girls could do stuff like that. And I didn't play the piano and, you know, all those things.
Yeah, so that's kind of super cool, isn't it?
yeah, I got into music, but I've like I was saying, I've always been the one who wants to control the music. Like I think most DJs will tell you, always been the one who put mixtapes together. You know, I would make a mixtape for anybody for a present or, you know, that kind of thing. So, but it was something that I never thought about doing myself until when did I get my first controller? It was Christmas 2014. My son and one of my good friends colluded and got me a tractor controller. Well, they gave me a secondhand tractor controller, an S2. And that was Christmas 2014. So that's when I started having a go at DJing. And the reason I did that was because at the time I was doing research with underground DJs, because I was fascinated with what it's like to do the job of being a DJ. So I was, as you mentioned earlier, I'm a professor of organization studies. So that means I work in a business school and I'm really interested in why people do the jobs that they do, and particularly jobs in the creative industries where the line between work and non-work, what you get paid for, free labor, exploitation, all of those things it's really messy. And I think that's a fascinating context to study. And it's a really interesting thing to teach the students as well, because obviously it's really cool and it's an interesting form of work and so on. So I was doing some interviews with these guys that I knew, and they were all guys at that time. And they were brilliant. They were so supportive, and they were like, you should just get yourself a controller. You should learn. You'll love it. Just get yourself some free software. And I thought, you know what? I'm whatever I was then, 45, nearly 44. If not now, when? So I started learning to DJ, and that's when it became a bit more personal, because I suddenly realized, where are all the women? It was like my eyes had been opened for the first time. It's like all the DJs I go and see when I'm out, all the music that I have and I own is all made by men. And that then set me off on the road to, you know, because it was personal then. To finding out more about that, and I'm sure we'll talk about that more in a minute. But yeah, so that DJing wise, I've only been DJing for nearly 5 years now, and I was just starting to get a few gigs and play for crowds where I didn't know people, you know, that kind of stuff. And then the pandemic hit, so that put the end of that.
Oh well, do you know, but the thing is though, I think once the pandemic's over, everything will be back to normal, and you know, you'll still be able to get gigs, and I think, you know, we've got to keep the hope that everything's going to return back to how it was. But it's funny how you say about when you were starting out, you know, it's almost like I talk about this a lot, imposter syndrome, isn't it? And you're like, oh, I've not been doing this for very long. Maybe people will think I'm a fraud, or, you know, but actually it's all about just doing it, getting on with it, making it happen.
Most important thing is to get out of your bedroom, get out of your living room and do it. Because it wasn't until I started playing in front of real people at parties, and, you know, they were in pubs, or I played at a festival that was, I was invited by a friend to play at a festival, but there were lots of people there I didn't know. And that's what makes it real. When people you don't know are dancing and they come up to you and go, oh, I love this, you're great, blah, blah, blah. Then you suddenly, you can't ignore that. You have to basically take that on board. You're not the best judge of whether you're any good or not. And the thing I found was that, you know, when you're behind the decks, everybody thinks that you're doing something and you're not. It's just the track. You're milking it. You're yay. I mean, obviously there are things I now know that you need to do, you can do, but you know, you're playing a good track. It amazed me how much you can actually get away with. You don't need to be absolutely brilliant to make a crowd dance. And I don't know if that's a bad thing to say, but
I think it's the vibe. People don't care. They don't care. And the fact you're like, oh, yeah, I might have messed up that mix, or, oh, everybody knows that I didn't do this properly or that properly. Nah, no one's got a clue. No one's got a clue. No one cares. You know, they're just happy.
Bad mixing is quite annoying though, isn't it?
But you'd hear it. I'd hear it. You know, another DJ would hear it. The crowd has not heard it. They have not heard it.
The thing I learned quite early on was that don't prepare your sets. You know, the times when I've not enjoyed playing the most is when I've prepared my set and I feel like, oh, that went so much better in practice, or I wanted it to go a certain way, rather than just thinking, actually, the people on the dance floor, or now the people the other side of the screen through the live stream, they don't know what I was going to do. Yeah, I've learned an awful lot from, like you said, just doing it and getting out there and doing it. And I've done a lot of live streams. This has been my most public year, actually. I've been doing a lot of live streams. So I've had more gigs this year and more people listening to me play than before the pandemic, so that's a bit weird.
The whole thing about not preparing your sets, I remember back in the day when I started out, I was petrified. I wanted to make sure everything was perfect, and I prepare it, and I never used to look up at all. I was just like trying to make sure everything was great. And now, I mean, I'm a little bit kind of give a fuck less, and also a bit more long in the tooth, so that's okay. Yeah. But now I'm you have to look up. You know, a friend of mine said, look up and enjoy the crowd and just, you know, go with the flow. And I was like, oh my God, but what if I make a mistake? And what if I don't put the tune in right? But no, now it's like, I never work a set out. I don't have an idea of what genre I'm going to play or what sets of genres in what order. But I generally pick on, you know, the age of the crowd, or something works, something doesn't, mix it up, yeah, a couple of high fives with them. You know, it's brilliant. But yeah, I mean, how does that work with live streaming? Because there is no crowd.
Yeah.
How do you do that then?
I think the fact that I'm trained as a presentational speaker, as a lecturer, really helps, because when you're standing in front of a lecture theatre of 450 students, it's performance, it's not teaching. So I've been trained and have 20 years experience in standing up and delivering almost to an invisible audience, because when you're delivering your lecture to that many people, it's almost like there's nobody there, if that makes sense, because you're just, my performance would probably be the same whether there was somebody in the room or not. So for me, live streaming and performing for the camera feels okay. And in terms of the interaction, because I've not done that many live gigs, I don't think I know quite how much I would miss that, if that makes sense. And the chat, the thing that I've found is, although I had to get over that, it feels weird checking your phone while you're mixing, but the chat is great, really great. Yeah. And I have a mic. I don't do a lot of talking, but I have a little bit of a mic so that you can say hi to people. And it's just been really nice getting feedback in the chat. And it's to mention Sarah again, she did some live streaming on an event I did, and she put it beautifully that, you know, she's actually feeling the vibe of the crowd through the messages in the chat instead of through them on the dance floor, which I thought was, you know, quite a fair point.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've done a lot of internet radio or online radio and FM radio, like back in the day, and people, like, you know, they text in, or they used to message in or whatever, and then you're like, oh, you know, shouts to Sarah in Bedford, or like, you know, whoever, and people love that. I think we've kind of almost clawed back the old school rave generation, where you're actually able to properly interact with people. So I'd be interested to see what happens moving forward. Are those people now going to come travel across the UK to see you at your next festival gig? Maybe.
Who knows? Who knows?
Who knows?
It's very exciting.
Well, I know, isn't it? Isn't it? Oh, let's not get our hopes up. So, right, okay, moving forward then, let's talk about, where was I going with this? Your interaction with the Sisu crew. You do quite a lot with them. So you do a podcast with them as well as a radio show, is that right? Or
we've got all sorts of different things going on. Sisu were one of the my entry points, if you like, into the world of DJing, and particularly opened up a whole load of networks where women and gender non-conforming individuals are, and, you know, really welcomed me with open arms. And it was when I was doing the preliminary work for In the Key of She, the research project, I was thinking about a way that I could make the data that I was generating through the interviews available to a wider audience, because I was feeling so inspired having these conversations. I should say, actually, the research project is me interviewing women and non-binary people who produce electronic music. So I'm very interested in female producers rather than, I shouldn't say just female DJs, but I'm interested in what makes people take that step into production, because it's something that a lot more men seem to do, and we have so few female producers. I mean, the figure that's generally bandied around is there's only 2% of producers are women, which is a slightly problematic statistic, but we won't go there right now. But Basically, I was interviewing these women, and it was just absolutely, they were blowing my mind, and it was so inspiring, like I was saying about Saya. And so I decided that these needed to be heard. And the thing with academic research is that the interviews, they're all done anonymously, quite rightly. It's all very confidential. We have to go through ethical approval, all that stuff. But once I've analysed the interview for the very small amount of information I need from them for the particular project, nobody ever hears those interviews. They never see the light of day. And I think one of the most important things about inspiring the next generation of women to get involved in production of whatever age, is role modelling, is hearing people's stories and thinking, oh my God, if she can do that, I can do that. If they can do that, I can do that. So it was one of those lovely coincidences that the universe sends you every now and then. I was sat at the traffic lights thinking about this project and getting all excited. And then I not checked my phone at the traffic lights, I have to say. I checked my phone when I got to work and looked at Facebook. And there was a message from this DJ collective that I'd just joined called Sisu, asking for program ideas for their takeover of Threads. It was, at the time, it was a different radio station, but... So I just dropped them a line and said, would you be interested in this idea of a two-hour show where there's an hour of interview with a female producer and then some music for hers on the end? And they were like, oh, my God, yes. And so that's been going for 2 years.
Yeah.
And the main thing that Sisu did was to run all female DJ courses. And I should say I'm using the word female in a shorthand way here to refer to all, you know, female with an X, you know, all variations of basically non-male, non-cisgendered men. and they run these lovely inclusive courses where you don't feel like an idiot for asking stupid questions. All the instructors are women and so on. And I did the Sisu course in January 2019, mm-hmm. and then became a core DJ with them as well. So the podcasts, we have a podcast series, which is a mixed series. We have a podcast series and a mix series, and there's all sorts of things going on, and it's a lovely community, and there are so many female DJ collectives now, and they're all really important spaces for support and sharing, and you know, they all have Facebook groups, and some of them are really active, and you can post you're saying about imposter syndrome, but you know, you can post your worries, it's all really nice, and it's very different from the mixed gender groups that I'm members of. You know, women have a way of just being nice to each other, I think.
Yeah, I think it's funny, isn't it, because there's no reason why women can't do what the men are doing with regards to music, and why there's such a gender imbalance. But I think because of, you know, you just get put down, and it's the confidence cut that comes with it. And actually in a group of, if you're in a, say, for example, a seminar full of men, there's only a couple of girls, you put your hand up, you need some balls to be putting your hand up to ask a question. Yeah. Whereas in a group of women, you wouldn't feel like that. And everybody's just a bit more responsive and really nice. I think it's important. It's very important to empower other women, which is kind of what we're doing now, isn't it? Sharing stories. I was speaking to a lovely lady, Minnie DeMix. She's on the podcast in a couple of weeks. Yeah, she's lovely. So we're talking about her being pregnant and DJing, and how you never see anyone on the festival scene pregnant, and how important it is to, you know, to not give up what you're doing just because you're having a baby, or, you know, feel that you can't do what you should be doing because you're having a baby. And I think I've only seen like 3 pregnant women in the whole of my career ever DJing out there. And, you know, it's just like you say, it's role models, isn't it? And it's
and there's a whole load of things that come into the mix, but it's partly a vicious circle, because electronic music production is so techie, and it came from military technology, and it came from computers, and it still is really computers, but you know, it has a history which is masculine coded, Yeah. And that means that women have kind of automatically shied away from it. Like I was saying earlier, it just doesn't feel like it's not somewhere you belong. If you don't recognize yourself in that. And yet technology appears to be neutral. There's no reason why women shouldn't be involved with it or attracted to it. And therefore almost it becomes like, almost like blaming the women. Well, you've got your choice. You can choose to do it, but actually there's all of these social things that are stacked against you. You have to be a kind of self-confessed geeky tomboy type person, you know, that kind of feeling that you've got to be into boys things if you wanted to do that. And because of that, there aren't many people doing it, there are, but we don't see them. That's a really important point, like you just said. And so because we don't see them, you don't think, oh, that's a space I could occupy. And so it becomes a vicious circle. So I'm hopeful for the future. I think we will see lots more girls entering music production and all the techie creative industries, because computers are now less masculine. Girls are more encouraged to be gamers or coders, or there's so many things. And I think, you know, when you think how far we've come in 50 years from women's role in the workplace, for example, 50 years ago in the 1970s to now, and now imagine in another 50 years, I think it's a case of, it will just take time. But on the other side, because you don't see that many women doing stuff, when you do, there's always this extra scrutiny that you're under. You know, it's like, if I make a cock up, I'm a crap DJ, but I've also got the whole sisterhood sat on my shoulders. And I'm really, whether it's real or not, you know, people think, oh, well, yeah, female DJs, they're rubbish. You know, you would never see a bloke have, everyone has bad sets, everyone clatters mixes. I dropped the wrong faders twice on New Year's Eve. I mean, that was just like, what am I doing? And you know, everyone has this stuff.
Turn it off with your elbow.
No, this was actually literally taking the wrong track out. It was late.
You've got to laugh about it though, haven't you? That's the thing. That's a beautiful.
Yeah. But you wouldn't then say, oh, all male DJs are shit, would you? No. Or even think that if it was a bloke, you know. And there's so much attention on the way women look that without, even when you try not to do it, we're conditioned to think, oh, she looks good. And we do it to each other as well. You know, that's the other thing. It's like, it's re-educating guys that to see us differently. And there are a lot of misogynist, sexist, nasty men out there. But there are also a hell of a lot of guys who don't really know what they're supposed to do and how they're supposed to behave, because it's a little bit unintentional, you know, they're not really sure. So therefore, oh, I don't want to book any women because I don't want to treat them badly. So I'd rather not get involved. I don't want to be accused of tokenism. So yeah. I'd rather not book any. And I don't know any girls anyway. And I have to go out of my way to find women. And then all of that combines for them staying in their comfort zone. And the end result is, you know, you don't get booked. So, sorry, that was a bit of a long-winded ramble, wasn't it?
Well, no, but I think it's the same for a lot of industries. You were saying about being a bit of a techie geek and stuff. I used to work sort of in the real world before I jacked it all into to live out here in Morsey. I used to work in the IT industry, technical sales. And you'd always get, you know, it's a very male-dominated industry. And although women were coming through, it's very much an old boys' club. And music is the same. You know, like you're saying also, it's, you know, they don't want to go out of their way to find another woman when they could just book Dave's mate who's, you know, up and coming and he's game. And yeah, it's all right, job done then, isn't it? So
yeah, that's exactly it. And it's not necessarily intentional.
No.
But it's easy. I mean, let's face it, you want to book your mates, you know, that's entirely understandable. So, you know, I think that all of the female collectives are fantastic because we're platforming each other.
Yeah.
But it does come a point where you think, if you're only being platformed in female only groups to other women, are we ever going to change anything? We need to kind of, that momentum and that support needs to prepare women and girls to go out there in non-female collectives, if that makes sense. But that's quite difficult because the environment can be quite hostile.
Yeah, it's like almost preparing them for the shit side of the music industry, or the not so shit side of the music industry. It's the next leap of faith. And who was I speaking to the other day? Eileen from the Unicorn Mothership. So on the on the retreat, she is a gloves. She's going to be gloves off, preparing everybody on the retreat for that next step. If you want to be serious and get into the music industry, this is how it's going to be. I don't think there's enough people out there kind of doing that next step. Like, I've got a nice little collective going, a good vibes only stuff happening. But, you know, I kind of expect the people that are promoting themselves and asking the questions and this, that and the other to be still posting in these other groups. But you know, actually, I don't know if they are. I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah. And it's particularly just sort of moving to production. This is something I've learned through doing my research, is that there are loads and loads and loads of women out there producing music and not being visible, or not being seen, not making chart positions, not being, well, not the chart positions are like the be all and end all of anything, but not being in. Occasionally I count up the number of female sounding names. I do actually spend some time looking up ambiguous names as well, and I go through all the beatport genres and I add up how many women there are in the top 100 tracks, and there's usually somewhere, depending on the genre, between 2 and 10. So there's tiny numbers.
Yeah.
And I know the folks at Beatport quite well through Association for Electronic Music. That's AFM that I'm have really involved with, which I'm really grateful for. And their argument is, well, that's just what people are buying. But that's a difficult argument, isn't it? Because people are only buying what they're offered. So if you don't spotlight and feature minorities, and we're not, you know, we could also say this about people of color and black and brown folks as well.
Yeah.
If you're only seeing features and you're only getting to know about the music by white men, then young white men with beards, I should say, then that's the only thing you're going to buy. And of course, you're not choosing your music on gender, but that's all you've got in, you know, and people say, oh, gender shouldn't matter. Well, that's all very well when you're a white man with a beard. But if
or a moustache.
If
popular. You're not, so popular at the moment.
Or creative dreams, you know, no one's saying anyone should be given any extra help. No. Just something to level the playing field a bit. So what I was going to say was that one of the things that I've noticed is that women tend to release their own music on their own labels. Now, on one level, that's great because it's good to have female-run labels. But my hunch is that it's damn sight easier to release music on your own label because you decide whether your music is in or not. And
you're the boss. Like, oh yes, I'm going to release this because it's brilliant.
Yeah, and it may well be brilliant, but you need to, if you release your music on other labels, then it's a badge of honor, isn't it? It's a quality mark. It's a reputational thing. And there are thousands and thousands of dance music labels, but I know I find myself doing it when I'm looking at artist profiles and I look at, oh, they've released on about 5 or 6 different labels. Rightly or wrongly, my gut feel is, oh, I take them a bit more seriously than someone who only releases music on their own label. Yeah. So this is the reason why I took the plunge and sent my music off to a breakbeat label, because I've only been producing for a couple of years. And these two tracks, I really like them. And people I trust said to me, these are really good. But I don't need the money. I'm not a producer who wants to be a full-time music producer, if there even is such a thing these days. So I was going to just release them on Bandcamp and then any money I made, donate that to charity or to good causes. But then I thought, this is the problem. Nobody will know who the hell I am if I do that, because I don't have a huge following. So cut a long story short, through some people that I knew, I was introduced to certainly a small label, but it's got, you know, a fair few thousand followers, and they listened to the tracks and they said, yeah, we'll put these out. And they did. And now lots of people know who I am. So it's important to do that. And I think it's like we were saying about earlier, getting people to take that next step. It's very often explained away by saying women aren't confident enough. Now, Yeah, that might be true. But what does that do? It makes it the women's fault yet again. Yeah. It's blame the women, isn't it? And sure, we are conditioned to feel that we're not good enough. But it's also about making the environment a bit more welcoming, or actually being invited would be nice. Mm. You know, so I really love it when I see guys on social media asking for tracks made by women, and they get a lot of crap from other guys saying, oh well, put a dress on then, you know. Oh, shut up, child, you know.
Shut up, child. Get back in your box.
The thing is, nobody is going to release crap music, right? No. And it's not good for their brand. So if a woman sends music and it's not ready, then work with her. She probably doesn't have a huge network of people like the guys do. She's not been doing it since she was 8 years old. Well, she might have been, but why not help that person and develop them and give them a little leg up? And yeah, if the music is then good enough, then release it or team them up with somebody so she can learn. You know, I just think, why do we always have to do the own work? What am I trying to say? Why do you always have to do the work in your ability to get accepted?
And I don't think a lot of women realize that there are a lot of mentorship programs available, some that you have to pay for, some that you don't. I mean, there's all varying costs for them, but a lot of people that have actually, I say, made it or have got to that next higher step in their career, they have a mentor. They either have a business mentor, a wellness one, or a music one. They have one, and having that connection with somebody like that not only will open up so many doors for you, but it prepare you for the next stage. But they will help nurture your sound, and no one's just made it, like, you know, I don't know if anyone can hear me click my fingers like that. You know, they've put a shitload of tracks out there, and they've had a mentor. Lots of people, I think, is it Nina Kravitz? She came up through the Red Bull scheme. A lot of them, which I mean, no one told me this years ago. If I'd have known, I'd have got a mentor years ago, you know.
Yeah. You need to learn from people. You need to be, it doesn't happen. We have this myth of the creative genius, I think, in Western culture, the idea that you just are this amazingly talented person. No, it's hard work, it's support, it's lots of things. And very often it's a team behind you as well. It's been very interesting, actually. I've now spoken to, 32 female producers, I think. Big long interviews, all about an hour, 2 hours long. And it's been really interesting listening to how people have got themselves established and how they have kind of gone to that next level. Because I've interviewed people who are still very early stage, and also some quite big names. So not the really big names, because they won't talk to me because I don't pay them.
They're too busy. Because they've made it now.
Sadly, you just don't get a reply. I have had a couple of replies from people's agents saying, you know, thanks, but we've just got no time for this, which is fair enough. But it's a shame, because what's missing from my research is the perspective of the people who have made it. So there's lots of people in the mid-range that I've interviewed, but they're generally, it's networking, it's meeting people, it's having the confidence to go to a conference, to feel that awful feeling of, oh, I'm gonna talk to someone, and then just go and do it, you know, and to have that patter, that elevator pitch. Hi, my name's so and so. I love what you do. I really wanted to talk to you. Sorry if I sound like a dick. I really love your work. Can we have a coffee? You know, or whatever it is. And then, you know, so you don't know where these things will lead.
No, you don't. It's, I think, definitely having the elevator pitch about who you are, nailing that paragraph is key. If you need to, you know, I've worked in sales for years, and in just having, even for Good Vibes Only, for example, I need to be able to tell people exactly what we do, what I'm offering, and it needs to be amazing. So they're like, oh shit, yeah, okay, cool, let's talk. You know, as opposed to being like, my name's Eliza, and I like female DJs, and no, people haven't got time for that. You know, get out there, go say hello. People are not horrible, generally, not to your face anyway.
No, and this is the thing that I've found amazing about the people I've met. Everybody's lovely, you know, really, really lovely people. I don't think there's anybody that I've met that I've thought, I won't be dealing with them again. I've heard quite a few people in the interviews saying about women being competitive and bitchy. And that's been quite interesting because I haven't experienced this and I haven't seen it. All I've done is heard about it. So I'm not dismissing other people's experiences, but it's intriguing. I need to think more about it.
I've had a few instances, mainly through running the festival stage that I do sometimes for Wilkstock. It's a charity festival in Stevenage in Hertfordshire. I've had a few instances with the women. I normally do a women's day and a men's day. And to be honest, the men are no hassle, literally no hassle to get all their shit together, the EPKs, whatnot, this, that, and the other. The women's group is an absolute nightmare to organise, an absolute nightmare. And that shouldn't be the case from one woman coming across to another woman. But they are, and then I've had a few bitchy things, and then I don't think the people that are bitchy have got much longevity in the industry. It's a big pond, you know, we're all little fishies in it. Everybody's got their own little area, and the more we help each other, the more opportunities we will get. I'm not going over after somebody else's job, or they're not coming after my job just because I've got them in to, you know, do a set with me at, say, one of my venues here. All that's going to do is get me a set with them and maybe more sets together, more paid sets somewhere else. There's definitely enough for everybody, but I think a lot of people are scared that they're going to lose what they have got by sharing, I suppose, in a way. Yeah,
generally this stuff comes from a position of fear, doesn't it? You're afraid of something. And I think, to be fair, if you perceive that you're in a minority, then you're going to be extra afraid, aren't you?
Barriers are up, aren't they? Like, I think.
And I don't know whether this is another stereotypical kind of position where we expect women to be bitchy and competitive. So that's what we see. Whereas if we saw blokes, we would just see hard-nosed business acumen, you know, or driven. That's what I love, you know, that, oh, yeah, he's really driven. And you think, basically, that means he's a bully, doesn't it? But that we do have different behaviour standards for men and women so that we judge the same actions in different ways depending on whether they're men or women. But you're not the first person to have said that dealing with women is an organisational nightmare. That's fascinating. And what exactly is it that causes the problems?
Do you know what? I have no idea. But I think maybe it's that maybe because some of the blokes I was dealing with at the festival had many festival gigs under their belt, and the women that I was given the opportunity to come and play hadn't. So there were lots of awkward questions. I mean, one of the requirements I have is that everybody needs to send me their EPK, and I've got some of them. I'm like, I don't want a Facebook link, isn't it? Electronic press kit, kit. Even just your press kit, electronic press kit. It doesn't have to be electronic, just everything. So your photo, your bio. Off the top of my head, what else is in there? Any music you're doing and a logo.
Link, socials.
Socials, that's it. Doesn't have to be crazy. And most of them are like, oh, I haven't got a bio. Well, the festival's in 6 months. If you want to pay, get it to me by the end of the week.
And how long? It does take a little bit of time to write your bio. Being in sales, I started my career in sales. I was brilliant at selling. I used to work at Dorothy Perkins, and I used to work on a Saturday afternoon.
Oh, DP, get in.
Oh, yeah, Dotty P's. And nobody knows, probably half the people listening to this, no idea what we're talking about. But I used to work for Dorothy Perkins, and I used to sell more credit cards on a Saturday afternoon than the full-timers did all week. I've always been really good at selling. And that's what you're doing is, why should somebody waste their life, their precious life, on whatever it is you've got to offer? What does it offer them?
It's ridiculous as well. I mean, you've got to think that the people that either want to book you or deal with you in whichever manner it may be, whether you're doing a Twitch or a live stream with somebody, they are busy. Shit together, get it all together and send it across them, because that really counts, because there are hundreds of people behind you that have all that information ready that are there waiting, and then you're getting stupid ass questions. I can't honestly, I think I was like banging my head against a brick wall with the girl group at one point. But I mean, some of, and a lot of it was private messages as well. But after a while, you're like, come on, girls, come on. Yeah. You've got this. Yeah. Just get on with it.
Good Vibes Only was that's the gap that you fill, isn't it? Is
yeah.
The business side of things, you know, actually being a DJ and the organizational side of music and the entrepreneurial side of it rather than skills based. That seems to me to be quite important. And
yeah, it's helping them believe in themselves and get their stuff in order and like helping them out with various things to do with like business. I mean, you're a business. At the end of the day, you are a business. You know, if you want to progress your music career, you need to start thinking that you're a business. Otherwise, you will never get out of your bedroom. Well, I say get out of your bedroom. We're all in our bedrooms now, aren't we? But, to take that leap of faith. I had a great chat with PhDMB. She does Remedy Promotions. And she'd only been DJing a year. And she set up like DJ battles. She's played at festivals in Australia. She was a yes girl. She made stuff happen. And it's just possible. It's just possible to do these things. You don't have to be like you were saying about worried about being only DJing for 5 years. It's not important. What is important is that next connection you make with somebody and putting your right foot forward and just going with it, isn't it?
One of the things I've found is being, so many people have said to me how, this sounds like I'm blowing my own trumpet, but how nice I am.
Oh, God.
Just being normal.
Oh yeah,
I'm just being nice. Other people like. I'm just being a nice human being and friendly, you know. And so, I heard this a lot in the interviews, and I remember thinking, you know, oh yeah, okay. And then, but I've experienced that now because the label that I was released my two breakbeat tracks on it's called Breakwind Productions. I should give Bobolino a shout out. I know, what a great name. I was like, do I really want my first EP to come out on Fart Records? But yeah, they were amazing. They did like the best little promo video for it. He pushed it and pushed it and pushed it. And, you know, everybody got behind the release and it got to number one in the Beatport releases chart. I have to get that.
Honestly, I was just about to come back round because you kind of like, washed over it. I've had this release here, this release.
No, it was crazy.
Oh, no, like, yeah, like, rewind selector. Yeah. It's the Beatport number one.
Oh, it was insane just before Christmas. And
congratulations, mate. Congratulations.
It's one of the easier, I'm not taking it, so this is a typically woman thing to do. Oh, well, it's the easy chart to chart in. You know, a guy would never say that, but I'm also a very honest person. And I checked out what you have to do. I have no idea how many copies it sold. And I'm sure a lot of people bought it to push it up the charts. But you know what? They wanted to get behind me, the label, the release, whatever, whether it doesn't matter. That shows the strength of support that you can generate if you are a decent human being who gives a bit back. And after Boba got in touch with me, we'd become quite friendly and chat on socials and stuff, the guy that runs the label, and he was like, you've been amazing. I'm like, really, what have I done? He went, wow, you know, you've promoted it, you've pushed it, you've just been an absolute joy to deal with. And I'm thinking, how would you be any different? I find it staggering. So I definitely think, you know, be nice to people and try and give something back, and things, good things happen.
Yeah, and you know, it's not an easy genre, mate, breakbeat. I mean, you're only competing against, I don't know, let me think about Stanton Warriors. I mean, you know, like, smashed it.
Yeah, and let me tell you a little bit about the releases chart. Basically, the releases chart is a bit of a weird one because, you know, when you go on to Beatport, I mean, I know there are lots of other platforms that you can buy from, but that's the one I use. So you go on, and usually when you see an EP, it's very rare that you would actually click buy release. Mm-hmm. You usually buy the individual tracks.
Yeah.
And for the release chart, you actually have to click buy release.
Yeah.
So you're buying the EP. And not so many DJs do that. So actually, you don't need to sell that many copies of the release in order to get a high position. But I just thought, do you know what? Why even think like that? Because it's a global dance music platform. It's the biggest global dance music platform.
Yeah.
The world obviously wouldn't be global, would it, if it wasn't in the world? But you know, this is cool. So, and I actually do still like the tracks, which is quite nice. I do still play. So,
yeah, So. In 10 years' time, I'll be like, oh my God. But no, honestly, it's amazing. I think it's just, and having people, like, being nice is key to the industry, full stop, I think, for longevity. And don't be a nightmare. Be nice. Mm-hmm. Don't be a nightmare. Get your shit in order. Make stuff happen.
There you go. I want that on a t-shirt.
Which is good vibes only.
Yeah,
but no, it's amazing. I mean, it's been fabulous speaking to you, and there has been so much advice in our little chit chat. It's been brilliant. If you could, if you could give a little bit of advice to your not your future self, to let's say to your younger self about the industry, what would it be?
Gosh, that's a great question, isn't it? Oh, I wish I'd asked people that question. Well, I think I would have said just do it earlier. I don't think I would do anything differently, to be honest. But I think what I would say is the choices that you are going to make, putting yourself out there and being visible and sticking your head above the parapet and just doing it, even though you're absolutely terrified, is the right thing to do. So, yeah.
That is brilliant. Yeah, thank you so much, Sam. How can people get in contact with you? What's the best way to follow you? I mean, obviously, apart from going to Beatport and buy your single.
that's long sale now.
So the EP, is the EP got a name, or is it just two singles?
The EP actually hasn't got a name. No, it's just the two tracks. The tracks were called Keep Your Distance, spelled D-I-S-D-A-N-C-E, Dis Dance. Ha ha. See what I did there?
Well done.
And the other one was called Sea Organ because it features a sample field recording of the sea organ in Zadar in Croatia. And I recorded some of it and then I played around with the sample and made it into the track. And basically that's why it's called Sea Organ. That's my favourite one actually, but Keep Your Distance sold better.
Yeah.
Anyway, my DJ name and production name is Dovetail and my SoundCloud is Dovetail_UK. And on Facebook, it's at Dovetail DJ.
Yep.
Fortunately, I couldn't have the same socials for everything, which I know is a marketing no-no, but there was not a lot I could do about that. But my main project in the social space, if you like, is In the Key of She, which is the research project, the radio show, and the platform. And the In the Key of She Facebook page is In the Key of She In the Key of She 2019, which was when it was set up. And on Instagram, it's at In the Key of _She. So that's where you can find everything. But there is also a website, inthekeyofshe.org,
which
is a good point of contact because the SoundCloud player is embedded in that, which has got all the episodes of In the Key of She interviews, and they're brilliant. I mean, even if I do say so myself, they're so inspiring, so interesting.
Yeah.
Just hearing stories there. We're now on number 23. Estelle Rubio is going to be number 23 this month. And then we've got a Brazilian producer next month. So that'll be 24. So there's hours and hours of stories from women who are producing electronic music and some great music in there as well. I think that's probably
I normally include a couple of the old linky poos in the show notes and of course on the socials when this goes out thank you so much. It's been amazing, mate. Brilliant. It's so good to put a face on it. Not many people know this, but Sam's actually booked on to come on to my retreat that is now re-happening.
Fingers like the best thing ever.
Yeah.
A relaxation, wellness, yoga and music production retreat. I can't think of anything better in the whole world ever.
Oh, mate. Well, you were the first.
I was like, oh, save me a place.
Yeah, honestly, thank you so much for your support throughout all of this. And I can't wait
for us to actually make it happen.
Oh, God. Cocktails. What I'm going to say is going to be a lot of cocktails, a lot of stories.
I don't drink alcohol. So can you make me non-alcoholic ones?
Yeah, mocktails. That's fine. Right. There's going to be a lot of drinks, there's going to be a lot of fun, there's going to be a lot of music, there's going to be a lot of like sun tanning, and then hopefully the day out in Split is going to be epic.
Split's amazing. I went to Split in, gosh, can't remember when I went now, it was a few years ago now. It was an amazing place. So yeah, really looking forward to it.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, and hopefully let's try and catch up again later in the year. Well, I am going to see you in May.
Yes, let's manifest this.
I will see you in May.
Yeah.
In Croatia.
Thanks a lot, Eliza.
No worries. We'll speak soon. Take care.
Take care.
You've been listening to Hustle, industry advice for women in music. Thanks again for taking the time to listen to this podcast. Please, please, please follow, subscribe, rate and give us a review. Help us to move up in the iTunes chart so that we can bring you more and more amazing guests. Thanks again. For more info on what we're up to, please check out our website, www.goodvibesonlymusic.com. Peace, love and good vibes always. See you next week.